Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
It's not often that a college class is so popular that its students invite their parents to sit in on a virtual lecture with them. But that's what is happening in Moshe Cohen's course at Boston University's Questrom School of Business. The class is on negotiation, and it includes some common issues, like negotiating your salary, but also things like where to have your wedding, or getting a good deal on a used car, and even where to go for dinner. It's the latest in our series Brilliant Boston, where we take you back to school and into some of the most popular classes in our very brainy region. Joining us now, as I mentioned, is Moshe Cohen, and he is also the author of Collywobbles, How to Negotiate When Negotiating Makes You Nervous. I feel that so much. So, Moshe, welcome.
Thank you, Carrie.
Okay, and I just wanted to mention before we get started, for full disclosure, that Boston University holds the broadcast license for WBUR. Okay, Moshe, I think when people think about negotiations, salary or job negotiations are probably the first thing that come to mind, but your class incorporates a lot more, both personal and professional. So can you give me a couple more real-life examples that you go through in class?
Absolutely. So we go through some transactional negotiations, which are things like buying a car, buying a house, you know, the everyday purchases of life, as well as things like career negotiations, salaries, promotions, and the likes. But there's also a lot of negotiations on the job. We negotiate with our clients, we negotiate with our vendors, other partners, our coworkers, and there's an awful lot of negotiations at home. I negotiate more at home probably than anywhere else.
That's a really good point. I know my sister told me before this segment, she's going through a negotiation about whether or not to buy a minivan with her husband. So they
exactly.
are everywhere. Okay, so you divide this course into two basic types of negotiation, competitive and cooperative negotiation. Can you define those terms for us and also tell us, you know, why make that distinction when you're teaching this course or when you're setting up the course?
So negotiations can be classified into competitive negotiations, which are ones where you care more about the outcome than you do about the relationship or anything else. Those tend to be one-time transactions. They tend to be very short-term. Collaborative negotiations tend to be longer-term, and they involve both outcomes and relationships. And while in truth, many negotiations contain elements of both, the skills you use for the competitive part and the collaborative part are actually quite distinct from each other, so that's why we teach them separately.
Well, let's dig into these a little bit more. The competitive negotiation, can you give us just a few more examples of what that might be in the real world?
So a very simple example is one of my students is applying for a job and has to decide what expectation to tell the employer, what salary expectation to give, and how to frame that negotiation in such a way that they'll get the best salary. Another situation is someone's going to buy a car, how much to offer the car dealer, how to deal with tactics used by the other party. Competitive negotiations are very psychology-based. They involve a lot of tactics that people use on each other. And the thing you want to do is be aware of what other people are doing so it doesn't have the same emotional impact on you, and so you can be strategic rather than reactive.
Well, and it seems like the power that one party might have more of than the other kind of plays a role in all of this, right?
There are always power imbalances in negotiation. The table is almost never completely even. But power comes from a lot of different sources. Power comes from, among other things, your preparation. The better prepared you are, the more power you have. The better you understand how to manage your emotions during a negotiation, the more power you have. Power does come from certain obvious things, right? If I'm negotiating with my boss has more power than I do in some ways. On the other hand, if I have a unique skill set, I have power that I can use in the negotiation with my boss.
Okay, so we did ask our texting group for some of their questions, knowing that you'd be coming in. And again, if you do want to join the texting club, you can text the word Boston to 617-766-0382. In the meantime, we have heard from Bill in Cambridge, and he wanted to know about negotiating in a housing market like ours, especially in Boston. You know, people are bidding tens of thousands of dollars over asking price, waiving inspections and other things like that in order to just secure a house. How would you advise Bill to think about negotiations in this kind of really competitive market?
So the first thing is, Bill, you really need to learn the market. Go see houses that you don't even care about. Go out there every week and make sure that you know the market, because one of the keys to negotiating in this kind of market is to be able to move quickly when you spot the right property. Because even in this market, there will be opportunities. You just have to be able to move very quickly when you find them, because if you don't move quickly enough, someone else will. Secondly, sometimes relationships do help. Sometimes buyers can connect in some ways with the sellers, and the sellers will choose a buyer even if they're not the top bid, just because they feel some sort of emotional connection to that buyer. So those are some of the kind of things that you can do in those situations.
Now, can people be different types of negotiators? Is there a difference maybe based on your personality?
Absolutely. So some people are naturally more outcome-focused. They're more short-term focused. They look to get an advantage, even if they end up damaging relationships as they go along. Other people really look towards the long-term, look towards relationships, and actually have quite a bit of difficulty negotiating effectively for themselves because they care so much about those relationships. There are people who are uncomfortable with conflict, uncomfortable with the whole negotiation process, so they'll look to rush through the negotiation process. And as such, you know, they'll give up a lot of their outcomes just to end it. So there are lots of different personalities. And one of the keys to negotiating effectively is to know yourself, to know not just your personality, but how you respond to different situations. Because your negotiating style isn't a constant. It actually changes depending on what situation you're negotiating in.
Well, and I want to ask you about something else that comes up in your class, too. It's called the no exercise. Could you tell us more about what that is and why you use it?
So one of the things that I've found over the years is that people have a very hard time advocating for themselves. I can't tell you how many times I've heard from people saying, I negotiate every day for my boss, but I can't negotiate with my boss. And this exercise is meant to help people become stronger self-advocates. And what they have to do is they have to go out in the world and over the course of 3 weeks, ask people for stuff with the goal of getting 10 people to say no to them. And they can ask for anything. They can ask for discounts, favors, money, freebies, upgrades, whatever they want. And they have to keep asking until 10 people say no. And one of the things they discover is that it's really hard to get 10 people to say no to you because people keep saying yes. And they realize through this is how much value they've been leaving on the table by not asking for things. And they also realize that even if someone does say no to them, typically, it's not like they feel bad about them. They just said no, and they move on. It's much harder for the asker than it is for the person being asked.
Interesting. It's like people are learning things on both sides of the equation here.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things that happens is as they get better at asking, they also get better at saying no when people ask them to do things they don't want to do. Because the dynamic is very, very similar. It's all about rejection. One of the reasons we have a hard time asking is because we're afraid of the rejection and the conflict it might create. For that same reason, it's also difficult for us to say no when people ask us for things because there's that same conflict and rejection that happens.
So one could get a no in a negotiation. You could get a yes in a negotiation. Are there different types of no's or yeses, though?
So I think, you know, when we look at no's sometimes as very absolute. But it turns out that some no's are more absolute and some are circumstantial. And one of the things that you can do is think of no as the beginning of the conversation, not the end of the conversation. So you ask for something, they say no, and then you engage the other party. You ask them why they're saying no, what could change that no into a yes. You try to find out what's driving the no. And very often you can find ways of turning that no into a yes. And this happens all the time. Just the other day, I had to get my son in to see the orthodontist on an emergency basis. And I called up and they said, oh, no, there's no appointments. But by the time the conversation ended, I did get him in there the next day.
Well, we've talked a little bit about power dynamics in a negotiation. Can you expand a little bit more on how race and gender can factor into that? You know, for example, a white man might be perceived as assertive, while a woman or a person of color might be perceived as aggressive.
That is absolutely a huge issue. Because when we're negotiating with people and they have a story about us. They have expectations, social expectations from us. And depending on who you are, they have different expectations. So one of the things is you're not going to change the other person. You're not going to change how they approach you. But what you can do is you can change your own emotional reaction to it and be able to respond strategically to those things. So, for example, if I, as a man, ask for something just plain and without any justification, I will be taken as assertive. And very often the other person will engage with me. Very often when women have to ask for something, they have to frame it in terms of the benefit to the organization. They can't just frame things as a benefit for themselves. Otherwise, there'll be a backlash to them asking. So I don't think that, you know, gender or race should affect what you're asking for, but it might change how you have to negotiate for it if you're going to be effective. And I wish it weren't this way, but I think people react differently to different people.
I want to talk a little bit more about the other type of negotiation, the collaborative negotiation. These are the ones where you might care a little bit more about preserving or strengthening your relationship with the other person. Did these things that the relationship, but also what you want, do they have to be in tension?
Absolutely not. Though I think we perceive them to be that way. We have this false dichotomy between outcome and relationship. And a lot of people say, well, I really want to push for this, but I'm afraid of damaging the relationship. Well, very often you can get both. You can get both good outcomes and good relationships. But in order to do that, you have to focus the negotiation on the underlying needs and interests of the person you're negotiating with and combine that with your own interests. And if you can have a conversation that is focused on what people really need rather than what they come in saying they want, then very often the negotiation can be very successful, both in outcome and relationship. But I think that's a very hard thing for people to do. Negotiating collaboratively is actually much more difficult. It requires a lot more skill than competitive negotiations, even though competitive negotiations stress people out more.
I want to ask something that's a little bit more newsy when it comes to negotiations. I was thinking about collaboration versus conflict in the political context, especially. Last week, as you know, we had two really significant Supreme Court decisions on abortion and gun rights, which went against popular opinion, according to surveys, at least from the Pew Research Center. And in Congress, it kind of feels like nothing really gets done in part because of the competitiveness between these parties. Is it possible for an institution like Congress to move out of that competition mindset and into collaboration? And should we even want that?
So I believe we absolutely should want that. And I think that in our current political environment, that's going to be very difficult, not because of the people involved, though I think there are some challenging personalities, but more because of the structure of the situation. When you have multi-party negotiations like you do in that scenario, the people in Congress are actually negotiating more within their own parties than they are across the table with each other. And if I'm in one party looking over my shoulder at what might happen to me in a primary, it's very hard for me to be collaborative across the table because I'll be seen as a traitor to my own party. And then it's very hard for me to reach out. So I think until the dynamics change in terms of things like gerrymandering and those kind of things that are really driving the parties to be more polarized, people are going to be looking over their shoulder and going to have a very hard time collaborating with each other, even if there are some people with goodwill on both sides of the table.
And finally, do you have any catch-all advice for us on good negotiating practices?
Absolutely. The first one is prepare. You know, I've been teaching this for decades, and it's amazing to me how often people come into their negotiations completely unprepared. So do your homework before you negotiate, otherwise you'll regret it. The second thing is good negotiators spend a lot more time listening than talking. All of Chapter 9 in Collywobbles is about listening, and if you don't listen, you don't pick up the information you need in order to be successful. And the third one is learn to manage your emotions in real time. And chapters 2, 3, 4, and 5 are all about emotional self-management because, you know, we can teach people skills and strategies, but then if their emotions get in their way, when they go to negotiate, they choke and things don't turn out the way they should. So prepare, listen, and manage your emotions. If you do those three things, you're already way better off than you would have been.
That was Moshe Cohen, a lecturer at Boston University's Questrom School of Business. During our conversation, you heard questions from our audience who reached out to us through our texting club. If you want to join that club, get behind-the-scenes info from Radio Boston and more, you can text the word Boston to 617-766-0382.